Welcome. This is Signal. Ian Gordon, also known as Horror Babble, is a prolific narrator of commonly known and obscure old horror and weird fiction short stories. He currently has 3 books on Audible with approximately 70 hours reading time. I came across this story by Mr. Gordon in the second book of his collection and wanted to read it myself as soon as I heard it. I was able to get in contact with him through his website, and he very graciously gave me permission to read his work. I strongly encourage you to go check out his work, and have included a link in the story notes to Horror Babble's website. And now, I present to you, for your listening pleasure, Peter Croft, Model Citizen, by Ian Gordon.
Few things haunt me the way the memory of Peter Croft haunts me. Seasoned though I was, 24 years on the force and a decorated officer, a single lifetime was insufficient in its capacity to prepare me for an evening in his company. Generally speaking, Raleigh is a quiet British town. Its criminal fraternity is inconspicuous compared to the counterparts in neighboring cities of Preston and Manchester. So when Croft was brought in for questioning all those years ago, I was unwise as to the nature of his alleged crime. Looking back, perhaps it was nothing more than his ability to draw breath.
The arresting officer, a young upstart named Ferguson, was doing his rounds down by Moor Park and was approached by a young lady who claimed she had become a little concerned regarding the presence of a strange man watching the kids in the park. The lady, a mother of 2 small children, directed Ferguson to a bench on the periphery of the play area. There he discovered the unusual fellow, sitting quite peacefully, head in the clouds. And though the odd character was indeed close to the play area, Ferguson noticed the absence of expression on his face.
A face oddly smeared haphazardly with white face paint.
The young officer was more than a little disturbed by the man's outward appearance. His clothing was more akin to a costume than common attire. The stranger was unresponsive as Ferguson questioned him. And as a result of a silence, the young officer took the decision to arrest him. Perhaps formal questioning would open him up. There were no protests, just the recognized mechanics of compliance. Some 10 minutes later, Ferguson arrived at the station, Croft in tow, and it was there, in the diffuse lighting of the interrogation room, that I first laid my eyes upon him. Strange though his presence was, I couldn't help but think a stronger word was required to describe the man's peculiarity. Abnormal, perhaps? He wore a tight-fitting black suit, beneath which sharp, protruding shoulders pointed towards the ceiling. Appallingly thin, the garment served only to exaggerate his cadaverous proportions. Truly a shocking display of malnourishment. Or worse. Though outwardly youthful in appearance, his gait was awkward, like the labored progression of a man advancing in years. But the body was merely an introduction to the man's staggering irregularity. The face. His face. I just couldn't fathom the details my eyes were presented with. The thick white paint masking every inch of flesh was cracked, both the eyes and the mouth, horribly unsettling. Mounds of black, unnatural hair spilled onto his forehead, surely a toupee. Lips, tastelessly smothered in red lipstick, served only to accentuate the total lack of definition there. And dark, bloodshot eyes glaring at me from the depths of some unknowable abyss screamed disillusionment. Or was it childlike wonder? That look, that very first look, I can see it now.
Oh, how carefully Kraft studied me. Seated opposite me, separated only by a simple article of furniture, his amorphous protruding jaw threatened to open. No words came out. A set of perfect teeth gleamed at me. Even that troubled me.
"What's your name?" I asked.
He opened his mouth again, and this time managing,
"Peter. P-I-E-T-E-R.
His voice lacked character, lacked inflection.
"Surname?"
I continued.
"Kraft. C-R-E-F-T. I nodded. "What were you doing in the park, Mr. Kraft?"
Kraft hesitated, but his eyes never left mine.
I don't know."
"You weren't up to no good, were you, Mr. Kraft?"
My question seemed to puzzle him. His brow furrowed, cracking the paint there.
"No good,"
he echoed.
"Yes, no good. You were watching the children, Mr. Kraft?"
He simply shook his head. The look of bewilderment remained fixed upon his made-up face.
Ferguson, who was loitering in the shadows behind me, leaned forward and whispered in my ear,
"To be fair, boss, I didn't see him eyeing up the kids. He was just staring into space. It was bloody weird."
I nodded my acknowledgement.
"I woke about an hour ago."
Kraft started, paused, before clarifying,
"I woke on the bench."
"Are you homeless, Mr. Kraft?"
His pointy shoulder shrugged.
"I don't know."
That white face. I felt incredibly uncomfortable conversing with the man.
"Why the face paint?" I pressed.
Kraft simply leaned to his left and glared at himself in the two-way mirror behind me. He shook his head, replying,
"I don't know."
I turned to Ferguson for reassurance. Ferguson shrugged.
"Okay, Mr. Kraft," I continued. "How long were you asleep on the bench?"
Once again, Kraft answered,
"I don't know."
Before I could question him further, gloved hands emerged from beneath the table. He placed them delicately upon the surface and spoke.
"I first saw the trees, tall and green. The light hurt my eyes. I had to look away. Then I saw the park. The children on the swings, back and forth, back and forth. The motion made me dizzy, so I looked at the ground, saw more things. The litter and the insects, the ants. The ants were busy, working. I like the ants. Then my eyes felt better. So I looked at the clouds, the fluffy shapes in the sky, white, blue, like a dream."
Throughout his rambling speech,
Croft never once broke eye contact.
Oh, how it bothered me.
Climbing to my feet, I motioned to Ferguson.
Excuse us, Mr. Croft.
Croft simply nodded as the two of us left the room. Standing in the corridor, Ferguson and I discussed the possibility that the strange man in our interrogation room might just be a patient at Weston Hospital, a psychiatric facility on the outskirts of town. Coincidentally, we were approached by a member of the counter staff, Leighton, who advised us of the arrival of a doctor from Weston, a man by the name of Philip Stanton Gordon. I met with Dr. Gordon in the reception area, who, quite oddly, bore a striking resemblance to the peculiar fellow sitting quietly in the interrogation room. The similarities were difficult to deduce, though, as one had to take into account the large quantity of paint masking Kraft's face. Politely, I introduced myself, and the gentleman acted in kind. The delivery of his words was slow and considerate. Allegedly, Kraft was indeed a patient at the hospital and had, and I quote, wandered off the premises earlier that morning. Concerned for Kraft's well-being, Dr. Gordon claimed the station was naturally his first port of call. When I queried Kraft's unsettling appearance, Gordon added a curious, somewhat convenient nugget of data. Kraft and several other patients were dressed and made up due to the impending arrival of Halloween, a mere 3 days away. I was understandably dubious. If the good doctor was to be believed, we had in our midst a lone psychiatric patient in full costume who just happened to wander into town alone, without guidance. My dubiousness persisted. Dubious or not, the events that followed were truly inconceivable. Suspicious and doubtful, Ferguson and I accompanied the good doctor to the observation room in order to allow him the opportunity to confirm the man in custody was in fact one of his patients. There was a confirmation, all right, but it manifested itself in an incomprehensible, horrifying form that I still have trouble with to this day. The awkward, distorted figure of Peter Croft stood upright before the two-way mirror, his white face practically touching the glass. Although he appeared to look at us, he looked only at himself. Engaged in some probing, arcane study, Kraft slowly removed his gloves, revealing smooth, china-like hands lacking fingernails. Coupled with what I believed was a total lack of facial hair, I later concluded that had he stopped there, I would have labeled him a recipient of Christ-Siemens-Tourette syndrome. But he hadn't stopped there. A bald index finger ventured towards his left temple. He pinched the flaky paint there and began to peel. Away it came, revealing further china-like flesh, smooth, white, blemish-free. Kraft continued to peel and flay until all that remained was an abstract, inorganic visage, a porcelain head. Other than those awful, perfect teeth, the only remaining human element were those bloodshot eyes, agonized, watery spheres staring longingly at their own reflection, a terrible, penetrating vision. I swear that hideous gaze met my own. Aghast, I turned to Dr. Gordon. I found no comfort there, just a curious look of familiarity and inevitability. With a crippling lack of dexterity, Kraft yanked back the toupee and tossed it aside. The mannequin form was almost fully realized. Two tiny apertures on either side of his smooth head marked precisely where his ears might have once been.
Then came one final demonstration of self-mutilation.
Kraft slid two blunt fingers and a clumsy thumb into his left eye socket and caressed the bloodshot orb residing there. Calmly and without hesitation, he extracted the eyeball and held it for a few seconds in front of his remaining eye. He tossed it aside as yellow, viscous fluid began to ooze from the open hollow.
I gasped.
Ferguson heaved. Dr. Gordon vacated the room. I assumed he was going to intervene, to stage a big reveal. Just a horror show. An elaborate prank. No intervention or revelation followed. Gordon disappeared. Kraft remained. Ferguson and I were left staring into the remaining eye of the mannequin man who, not but 10 minutes ago, had introduced himself as Peter Kraft. Who or what he was would remain a mystery. The nightmare vision of Kraft, in his final glory, only served to open doors. Ferguson and I wish we could close. Before collapsing on the floor as nothing more than a macabre mixture of porcelain, mustard, and cheap fabric, Kraft uttered through perfect teeth,
I'm falling apart, I'm falling apart, I'm falling apart, I'm falling
apart. Please visit thisissignal.ca for links to YouTube and contact information. This is Signal is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, and Google Podcasts. Signal can also be found on Twitter at @signal_is. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.